Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, car, what else?
Cars.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it. No.
But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
I just want to set out by apologising.
No, not again, mate.
For my voice.
Again, it's 2 weeks in a row.
Mean, it's like, I think last week it was a bit sort of raspy or maybe just a bit missing, where it's now developed into this kind of like croaky, nasally. It's less sexy than I think it was. So,
I mean, if you think your voice is sexy, you're hearing something completely different to us.
Hello. Welcome to Behind the Glass.
You definitely wouldn't, you haven't got a voiceover voice, that's for sure. No,
but luckily, I haven't. It's not COVID. I've taken 4 tests now. I haven't had COVID. So I think it is extreme hay fever mixed with what my mum is calling a summer cold.
Yeah, I would say you just got a bit of a summer cold and bit
exhaustion.
Run down because you worked really hard last few weeks, didn't you? So, is that slowing up? Or?
Yeah, it's gotten the best of me. I think it's gotten the best of me. And well, anyway, so I don't think I'm going to sound that great today. So if you're like, oh God, Sam, blow your nose, clear your throat, I can't. This
clear.
Is me. You're gonna have to bear with it. Maybe it'll be nice. Maybe you can pretend like someone else is here today. If you're bored of me each week, maybe you're like, oh good, I can just listen to Tony and someone else.
some weeks I think that anyway. I just shut my eyes and think there's someone else here today.
Please don't let it be Sam again. You're so rude. I think of that. I actually think,
here we
God,
go.
Why didn't I invite somebody else to be my co-host all those years ago? Why did I have to invite you? Because now I'm stuck with you.
You are.
That's the
but
problem.
It wouldn't be so successful without us both, mate.
trust you to say that.
Like Laura and Hardy. You can't have one without the other now.
I suppose.
It's too late.
I know. That's why I regret the decision.
We're in.
God damn it. Anyway, hopefully lots of you, if not all of you, would have seen part one of our Milo Milia adventures now gone live. Mm. Went live on Sunday. Some amazing feedback and comments, especially from patrons. Actually, those of you that support us here on the podcast, I think you like seeing us on the main channel, going on a bit of an adventure. It felt like maybe the podcast on tour or in real life. And so, part two coming this weekend. We're still riding on a high from that, aren't we?
Watching back the video, if I do say so myself, I think it's the best thing we've done. As a pair, I think it's the best video and adventure we've ever done since we've known each other.
Agreed, mate. Agreed. And on a personal level as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact we're still pals as well, which is amazing because
when you see part two, you'll realise that very nearly we weren't pals. but anyway, well, that's enough melee chat because we've got a special episode coming next week, which will give you all the behind the scenes secrets and a few of our thoughts once both those videos are out. So yeah, stay tuned if you want to hear more about melee. Today's episode, amongst other things, is a reflection on Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Oh, good.
Which obviously just took place.
Yeah.
Which you didn't attend.
No. Well, I'm going away on holiday in a couple of days, and I just had so much to do. I was invited.
All right, no need to show up. I was invited. I was invited by like six different manufacturers, VIP. Could have gone with the Duke if I wanted to, but
well, that is actually true. I could have gone with the Duke.
You know what? So many people came up to me and said, "Oh, is Tony here?" And I went, "No. He's running a £1 million business.
He can't multi-million. How dare you? £1 million? We'll get out of bed for that.
Running a multi-million-pound business. He can't be bothered.
You
can't
didn't
be here.
Say
I,
that.
I listened to everyone.
Did you really?
Everyone who asked, I was like, "No, he's running a multi-million-pound business. Too busy for this kind of stuff."
Do you know when I meet people out in public? I always say quite nice things about you, but now I'm not going to. I'm going to go in on you every time.
That's not me being mean. That's the truth, and it's what you would have said. If somebody said, "Oh, I'm surprised to see here," you would have been, "Well, yeah, I do run a multi-million-pound business."
I'd have said, "Mind your own business." No, but I'm going away later on in the week, and I just had too much to do, mate. Mm-hmm. Too much personally, and too much work-wise. Just need to set myself so.
And you're not going away on a beach holiday to put your feet up?
No, I mean, I think everyone... I mean, I do have a holiday with my family once a year. That's normally around Christmas time. But I think everyone knows when I go away, in general, it's a driving holiday. Because that's what I like to do.
Best kind of holidays.
Yeah, so we're going to the Alps, starting off Andermatt.
Lovely.
Which we're staying in Chedi, which is probably just about one of the nicest hotels I've ever stayed in. It's amazing.
I think it's up there. It's in definitely the top five or top 10 maybe of Europe.
For sure. 100%. Yeah, it's an amazing hotel. And we're there for two nights as well. So the first day we're going to literally be in the Swiss Alps. And then day two we're off and we're going to head down towards a little bit of Italy and then over to the French Alps and we spend the rest of the week in there, finish at the south of France. So
lovely. Not Monaco. You hate Monaco.
No, we are deliberately swerving Monaco.
I was going to say, Tony is not a fan. I've maybe three, four, if not five times, myself and Paul have dragged Tony to Monaco and every time, about 4 hours in, Tony goes, "I hate it here."
But it's because I end up there every year for some, by hook or by crook, whether I come with you guys, whether I go with my pals, supercar driver, we always normally either start a trip there or finish a trip there. Because it is quite good to start and finish. But I just got like fed up with it. You know, there was one year I went like three times in a year.
I would be so happy.
Yeah, I know, because you boys really love it. I mean, Paul just loves driving there through the quickest way that he can get there and then just walk around all week looking at cars.
Literally, that's his dream. Yeah. He just wants to do one day, London to Monaco, as quickly, no stops, just get there. Park up, sit in McDonald's and watch cars.
Literally,
I mean, he's McDonald's. Hilarious. But okay, so that'll be super nice for you. So it's an Alps driving tour, essentially.
It's an Alps driving tour, five of us.
What kind of cars?
Me, 992 Turbo S.
You taking the Jumeirah? Oh no, Jumeirah hasn't arrived.
Jumeirah's not arrived, yeah. I might have a Valkyrie now. I'm pissed off.
With the Jumeirah. Because the customer deliveries have started.
Yeah, for sure. 992 Turbo S Cab, lovely. SVJ, new GT3,
ooh,
PDK. Okay.
Ooh, PDK.
Yeah, and an F8 Tributo.
Okay, so of the cars coming, which are you most jealous of? Or which one do you think the person's picked best? Because SVJ, let's just both agree.
No.
Each to their own. I'm sure SVJ man loves his SVJ.
No, he does absolutely love it. He's had SVs and Aventador S's. And
so he's
going
to be very happy.
He loves it.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to be in that.
No. None of the rest of the lads would want to be in that either.
F8, you're going to learn next week, is a car that we both suddenly turned on to. Let's not talk about it too much.
No.
We know that we spoke on it a lot. F8. And then GT3 Turbo S. Now, I mean, for the trip you're doing...
GT3. For sure, yeah. And I'm interested because I'll have a go in it as well. We all normally have a little bit of a swap round throughout the week. I'll swerve the Turbo S, I think, because I've done lots of miles in one of them. But I've not driven an F8 properly, so I'll have a go in the F8. The SVJ, I'll take it or leave it. I'm not that bothered. And I'll jump in the GT3.
Your first time driving a 992 GT3,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So in my head, I will have my generation 3 RS to compare it to. I think that would be a good comparison. But we'll see. We'll show it some corners and we'll see what's what.
If the other cars weren't going, if it was a solo trip, I would be most jealous of the Turbo S cab. I think that would be a fantastic choice for that trip. If you're just out by yourself, maybe with a, a partner. Because it's been a lovely car just to schlonk around in. But I think because the other car's going, it's the least attractive to me.
Well, the SVJ would be your least attractive
to me. I'd take that over Turbo S.
Would you
on
really?
The trip that you're about to do, yeah.
It's just the Turbo S and the SVJ, when we start getting up on the really twisty bits, they'll really start to show. And maybe to a certain extent the F8, but the F8 not too bad because I've taken plenty of 488s on trips like that and they've been fine.
I think I'm going to jump in here and say that only because of you, and I know one or two of the other guys that you're going with, because of the style of driving that you do,
yeah,
that's the only reason an F8 would ever be shown up.
For sure.
99% of other people going on that driving trip, F8 is more than necessary. And I'm sitting here not knowing direct comparisons between F8s and 458 Speciales and whatever else you've been in, various things, but yeah, that can't be more than enough. It's just that one or two of you I know really like to attack corners, really like to, you know, to really push the handling of the cars and things like that, yeah, on the roads. And so yeah, I will leap to the defense of the F8 quickly and just say it's your circumstances that would, yeah, because otherwise it sounds a bit out of touch to be F8's gonna be slow.
No, it definitely won't be slow. That's not the case, but maybe the tires, or because I had it in 488s where after a couple of hours when you're really pushing on, tires just get a bit too much. If you put R's on them or
special rubber,
you'd be okay, mate. Yep, it'd be absolutely fine. But the brakes are normally all right. On all of them, the brakes are a bit... SVJ sometimes gets a bit hot. I mean, that car, mate, the SVJ, flipping. It does, you know, it does two tanks of fuel. It stops twice to once to all the other cars. It is abysmal. But like I've said many times before, whenever we go through a village, we stop for a coffee, it's... Everyone gravitates that. They do not give a toss about anything else.
And
around.
If you're into it, you're only going to get that certain kick, that certain sensation from that car.
Yeah.
So I get
have
it.
Have you driven an SVJ?
Yeah, I've driven an SVJ.
Yeah, it is loads better than an SV because of the rear steering.
But rear steering and that gearbox is a tad more succinct.
But compared to the other cars that are going, it gets shown up a little bit.
For
you know
sure, because
I mean?
Yeah. It's 20 years
old. It feels like it, yeah, to drive, for sure.
Speaking of GT3 quickly, and actually speaking of Goodwood, because that's what we're trying to move on to, to update you all on my impending
oh, I've had this all weekend
lock date. So if you missed last week's episode, confirmation that my GT3 build is going to be in October with hopefully delivery late October, early November. I have to lock my spec if I want to take up the PTS paint to sample offer 6th of July. So it's what, a week next week? It's mid next week, isn't it? I think, yeah. I could say I don't want paint to sample and that gives me to the end of the month. But it's now basically oil, but all boiled down to paint some colour. And I had picked one. And then I went to Goodwood and I met with some of my Porsche friends and some people who are really in that world and have very highly spec cars and lots of paint sample cars.
Mm.
And they were super on board with the colour that I'd chosen. But then they showed me some pictures and I was like, oh, is that what it looks like? And they were like, yeah. And I was like,
Have I seen the colour you've chosen?
I don't think you had, actually. Right. I'll show you afterwards. But yeah, I was all keen on it, but then now seeing some photos of the car, because it's so different, configurator to showroom to
mate.
Out in real life, yeah, it's so different, and I'd only seen configurator and showroom pictures, and then I saw some cars with that colour out, and I was like, ugh. So I went back to square one and had a panic attack, and then a lot of your comments and suggestions from last week of colours, and also a lot of you, thank you, by the way, for saying to me, just pick the colour you want.
For sure.
Because, you know, I've always said that, and I've always done that. My whole channel has been run off picking cars and things that I like and want, and then sharing that with you, and if you're interested, great, and if you're not, who cares?
Yeah.
And the few times that I've bought cars for the audience, it's flopped massively. Yeah. So I needed that reminder, and I'm now back to kind of what my initial idea was. It does mean, though, if I go down this route, I could end up with the cars in my garage all looking fairly similar in terms of spec.
No.
Yeah.
In terms
don't
of,
say too much.
No, but no, I won't say anything.
You know a few things that they don't.
No, of course. But what about gearbox?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not going to reveal it, but I've decided. I'm not going to reveal anything, but I've decided. But so it's now, it's simply left down to colour. That's all. It's just colour. And I'm fairly confident in my own choice, and I know that I'll be happy. My thing is, well, but then do I want cars that all look a bit similar. I don't want to take the opportunity to have cars that look a bit different. That's the only thing which I'm trying to work out. So anyway, Goodwood I thought was going to help. I thought I was going to see some friends that were going to go, yeah, mate, what a choice. But I saw, as I say, two or three very proper Porsche people that I was like,
I would rather, knowing you and me personally, I would rather go different. I wouldn't rather have all the same cars in. I know it looks nice and they're all fairly matching, but I would always have a bit of diversity, mate. I mean, you've got diversity in friends. I mean, you've got some proper friends, they're me.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, see?
Anyway, so well, look, Goodwood, what did you miss? Quite a lot, actually.
Well, did I?
Yes, you did.
Really?
Yeah, because as much as we've slagged off the event prior to going, and as much as I'm not going to say, oh, it was the best year ever, there was still lots to see, lots to look at.
Yeah.
From the, what's it called, competition cars, or the Cartier Style Luxe cars, whatever. A lot of that is repetitive, for sure.
Mm.
A lot of the rally cars, you see a lot of those year on year come back and do the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we had some big showcases, some big hitters, some surprises. And I think let's dive straight in.
Okay.
With our friend Max Chilton. In the McMurty
mentioned Max, because one, fair play for him for sitting in that car and going up that hill at that speed. Congratulations for breaking the record.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But just sitting in the car, and actually there's a clip online of showing his face. And he looked scared, mate. Yeah. Don't I don't know if you was,
don't,
Max.
I don't think he looks scared. But he looked, I think, like, he's focused.
Focus, yeah. But that thing, from what I saw, is like, I mean, it's going to kill someone, mate.
Well, I mean, Max said this. So, you know, just to bring you up to speed, a few months ago now, Max Chilton, ex-Formula One driver and amongst other, we should give him a better title than ex-F1 driver, shouldn't we?
Well, but what better title do you want for him?
Good point. ex-F1 driver, Max Chilton.
Yeah.
Came on the podcast, we had an amazing chat with him, and he told us at the time all about this McMurty spieling. And I feel like I'm still not saying that quite right.
Did we air it?
Of course it's.
Oh, we did.
What are you on about?
No, I can't remember what, because he told us some stuff off camera as well, didn't he?
He did. But yeah. No, that was all told. And he spoke about how incredible this thing is, and it was as close to an exhilarating experience as driving an F1 car as he's ever had. That was the closest he's been in any kind of car as an F1 car.
Yeah.
And it's essentially a ground effect electric missile.
Yeah.
And the dangers, which you just mentioned and he highlighted, is if you ever break the ground effect. So if you hit a curb or a bump or anything like that, and it breaks that vacuum effect that's sucking the car to the road, that's when there could be a big crash. So you're not wrong saying
there will
someone,
be a big crash, mate.
Because the thing took off at Goodwood from day one.
Yeah.
It looked like it was going to trouble the all-time record, which was set by the Volkswagen ID3 thing, the Pikes Peak special car, which I saw go up the hill a few years ago, and that was nuts in itself.
Yeah.
Prior to that, Nick Heidfeld had the record in a 1999 McLaren F1 car. So I think it was 41 seconds, 39.9 seconds, and now the new record at basically 39 dead. And yeah, Max and the McMurty team were firing this car up the hill all weekend, and people were audibly gasping when it went past.
Yeah, I know.
Because a lot of the time on those show runs, people don't really give it full chat, especially with the F1 cars. Like, okay, so it was amazing. Nigel Mansell went up. He went up in all different eras, 90s Ferrari F1 cars, the Williams, his iconic championship winning Williams.
He's still fitting an F1 car, by the way.
He still goes. He's just cracking on, mate. And I was like, what flat a legend. Out. Yeah, and seeing his helmet and everything.
Yeah,
no one knows, but not flat out. So this is the thing, it's quite rare, even in the supercar run or in the competition class run, that people really go flat out. And when they do, it's incredible to see.
Do you think a current F1 car driven by a current F1 driver would beat that record flat, if it went flat?
Such a great question.
Tires warm.
I don't know, actually.
Because I don't think I've ever seen anything that looked so fast as that thing that Max drove up that hill. I mean,
didn't he say at Silverstone he was close to or at his qualifying lap time in the Marussia back in the day, in the McMurty? Didn't he say something like
he
that?
He said something like that, but that was 10 years ago,
of
probably.
Course. So,
current F1 car, mate, honestly, especially last year's car, can you imagine that going up
but
there?
I think
absolutely
it's too. I think it's too narrow, that track.
Yeah,
especially the wall section. That the thing about that McMurty is that it just. I hope I'm saying that right, by the way. It just absolutely flies.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to the ground, and you could see dirt from the track being flown out the back because the air was vacuuming and sucking up at such a rate.
Powered by fans, right?
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. Literally gluing itself to the road. So, well, okay, well, here's the proof, right? A 1999 F1 car went up there in 2000 or 2000. I can't remember when Heidfeld set that record. In 41 seconds.
Flat out.
And that held the record for it up until 2019. Okay. So you've got to think, therefore, that yes, a modern day F1 car, full chat, would be quicker.
The problem is with a modern F1 car as well. I mean, if you get it wrong up that hill in a modern F1 car, I mean, the margins would be tiny.
Same
as well.
With Max.
Yeah, for sure.
You said it at the beginning of the subject. Bravo to him.
Yeah.
Balls of a bull.
Yeah. But we already know, mate, that, I mean, Max is a very talented driver, but we already know that these F1 or ex-F1 drivers and stuff, they're not wired right, mate. They're wired
nutters
completely. Yeah. And they'll just go as fast as they can, not as fast as the car will go. Whereas most people
No, faster than the car
can go. That's what I mean. Their capabilities are always more than the car, whatever they get in. Whereas a normal human being is, you're always very lucky to get to the capabilities of an actual car. And then depending on your ability means the faster of car you can drive. But yeah, F1 drivers and stuff, they'll get in anything, can drive it absolutely flat out, and they're still
flat
fun.
Flat out. And that's the thing, you know, I got the sense that team turned up with the intention of breaking that record.
Oh, for
like
sure.
From day one, lap one, it was like, that's what they're here to do. Yeah. And that had to be exhilarating for Max and that whole team, and had to have pushed him forward. And you're right, the levels of concentration, it's not like, oh, what if I get this wrong? It's like, oh, I got to beat the previous time. That's where those pro drivers are nutters.
In my head,
I'm like, this is a big crash. This is death.
Yeah,
you're going to kill 14 spectators. Yeah. But he's just like, I will beat the time.
Yeah.
Amazing to see. And then confirmed with the... then rewarded, I guess, all of us with the confirmation that these road cars are going to be coming, road versions of it. I mean, nuts. So yeah, bravo, Max. I say, friend of the podcast. Great to see. I think he got driver of the weekend.
So he should.
Yeah, great publicity for him and for the whole team and everything. And yeah, fantastic. So really cool. And fingers crossed, we'll find out some more. Maybe we'll even get to go and experience that car at some point. That would be cool behind the glass feature, wouldn't it?
I'd love to go flat out in one of them. Go on, can we go on a track though?
Not a track.
Not on the road, yeah.
It's too fast.
It looks
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for me, that was the standout feature, things going up the hill.
Yeah.
Also, we saw the new Porsche Le Mans hypercar thing.
Was that quick?
Yeah, and it actually sounded pretty good.
Did it?
It's a reworked version of the 918 Spider engine.
Right.
Now, this is why I got confused.
One of my dream cars, that car.
I know.
I've got to have one of them.
I think you could.
Yeah, I think I will.
They're value-wise, mate, they're right there or there. Mm. Couldn't you buy one with one of your mates?
No, it's not about whether I can buy one or not. It's not always about the issues, about timing as well. And there's lots of other factors in terms of the batteries.
Sure.
I mean, they're not warranted anymore. And like the P1, they're around $100,000 to replace. So, it's all about moments and timing. I definitely will tick it off one day because I lust for that car.
It's an amazing thing.
And it's an amazing thing. And obviously, I really lust for a laugh as well, but I can't afford a laugh. It's as simple as that.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, they are just gone, laughs.
Yeah,
I mean,
gone,
value-wise, they are gone.
Yeah.
I want someone to clarify this to me because I've got really confused by the WEC World Endurance Championship rules. When they introduced this Le Mans hypercar class, I thought the hype... pun intended, and excitement was around the fact that we were going to get homologation hypercars again. Mm. You know, it was talk of the Valkyrie being entered, and I can't remember what else at the time was rumoured of going in, but maybe for a LAF FXXK, or if not, we were going to get these new entry hypercars that we're going to have homologation versions. But that just doesn't seem to be the case. Like, everyone's just creating... Well, they just look like prototypes that have been running forever.
And they do, yeah. They don't look too different from the old cars.
No talk of homologation versions. Now, someone said, well, that's because Porsche have been very clever and basically used old parts.
Yeah.
So they're already homologated parts, essentially. So someone please clarify that for me. But the thing looked great, looked really cool. And what I didn't realize, it's a bit of an old school mentality. They're basically selling the car to teams. So I don't know, and again, clarification please, if Porsche are entering as a factory team. I think they've built the car, and then Penske, I think, are running it at some point, and Jota, I think, are running it again in Le Mans, like that. So they're basically, which is a very old school sort of...
A lot of that in racing, though, especially lower down.
Aston Martin do it for privateer teams a lot.
Yeah, the GT3 and touring cars and all that, it's all like, we'll supply you with a car, but you buy the car from us, and then we support the team.
So that will be interesting, because if Porsche are entering F1 with Red Bull, as we suspect, it makes sense that they're not a manufacturer team within WEC as well, but they're just creating the cars. It's interesting.
Yeah,
but.
did you see on tiny little bit of a segue, did you see online that Red Bull have opened a separate company for their engine now?
Interesting.
Paving the way for obviously Porsche.
So you think, or you're speculating, that Porsche will own the Red Bull engine department?
I think that'll be the case.
So it'll be Red Bull powered by Porsche?
It'd be Red Bull Racing powered by Porsche, yeah.
Which would make sense, right?
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
Especially with the development of the synthetic fuels and stuff,
yeah,
rather than Porsche Red Bull Racing.
Yeah, because Red Bull are an energy drink, as we know. I mean, they're not an engineering company. So.
No, but I mean, the F1 team is the F1 team.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, definitely a separate thing. But yeah, you're right. From a marketing point of view, makes far more sense to Porsche to get the badge or the bragging rights of the engine development.
Yeah, Red Bull can do the aero.
Yeah.
And Porsche will do the mechanics.
I think that announcement is due any second
now.
Yeah,
me too, yeah.
I guess it'll be cool to see. It still kills me slightly.
Well, because they'd be good.
Well, they will be good.
I mean, they're already good.
But I've always struggled with Red Bull because as much as I love Vettel now, when Vettel was dominating, I wasn't a Vettel fan. I was a Hamilton fan. And that was boring. And now, most of you know, I'm not the biggest Verstappen fan. So Red Bull have always been a little bit of a nemesis to me. So the fact now one of my favourite car brands are going to be tied with them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
I don't have anything against Verstappen. For sure. I think he will be the next person to dominate F1, I think.
For sure. I'm just not his fan.
Fair.
I'm not against it. I just don't support him. Like, I'm not sitting there going, boo!
It's always like, weird with F1. We spoke about this a little bit before, but it's always weird. Like, you sort of pick a driver. You don't follow a team, you follow a driver. When it's football, like, you follow the team, and no matter where the players go, it's always the team. But with F1, you follow a driver. If you're a Vettel fan, a Leclerc fan, a Lewis fan, wherever they go...
The proof in the pudding, you know, as a Schumacher fan for my entire youth, McLaren were, I mean, that was the dark side of Star Wars. I mean, they were literally the most evil, heinous, McLaren, like literally made me feel sick to the stomach.
Yeah.
When Schumi retired and I'd been watching Lewis coming through and he was going to be signing for McLaren, I immediately am there supporting Lewis, who's a McLaren driver.
Yeah.
And going like, oh no, beat Ferrari. So even though in my heart of hearts, obviously I'm a Ferrari fan, and it's all the excitement of Leclerc. Well, winning a few races.
It's not exciting.
Maybe not the championship. But yeah, so you're so right. It's you follow the drivers.
Yeah.
And Formula One, I think, are aware of that, but sometimes forget about it.
Mm.
But the proof in the pudding now, Hamilton having a pretty torrid season, every single weekend, he's still top of the news agenda. They're still talking about him.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a driver thing.
Yeah.
Actually, let's talk about Mercedes quickly, moving on from the Porsche hypercar. AMG One. Let's not do our 10-minute segment bashing them. We've done a whole load on this car.
Yeah. I'm glad you bring them up.
Big, you know, dynamic debut. Good word. Here, the car we've unveiled. It's coming. It's here. Wow.
Mm.
Breaks down, I think, on the Thursday or Friday.
Did it?
Broke down, I think, midway up. And then I think... Maybe it didn't crash. Late last night, Vicky goes, oh, Project One crashed. And I was like, oh.
She had some wine.
How do you know that? Yeah, that's just how she speaks. She goes, yeah, my friend just sent me a story.
She doesn't speak.
She doesn't speak. And I was like, oh, what a disaster. I think I even put it in our group. Project One broke down on front. Now it's crashed. I think it was the GTR Black Series track. Specific things.
Right,
I saw some footage of that later.
Okay, fine.
So I'm not certain. But anyway, long story short, I don't think the AMG one had its kind of big.
The Valkyrie broke down last year, though, didn't it?
Up the hill? 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
You know, didn't have its big moment. There was plenty of other big hitters, I felt, this weekend that seemed to steal the show.
Mm.
I didn't see the hype around AMG one as maybe they were hoping or expecting. Definitely lots of other cars that.
I mean, it's all sold out, but I mean, as we all know, I'm not the biggest Aston Martin fan at all. But if I had to pick out the two cars, I'd have the Valkyrie over the AMG for sure. I mean, that I think they've done a better job, mate. It sounds amazing.
Sounds
that car.
Good. Does
it
sound
looks
very good.
The bomb. You know, I honestly
don't
think
it works either.
No, it probably doesn't work. No. But what I'm saying is, looking on the face of it and listening to them both, I think they've done a miles better job than Mercedes, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to speculate here. The next big name in terms of money and, I guess, the supercar world. So, obviously, Pagani turned up in whenever it was, the late 90s, have become a sort of, you know, staple within that kind of super luxury hound. Koenigsegg have done the same thing.
Yeah.
I guess Senvo are trying. But what would you say if I said to you Lanzante?
No idea.
No idea?
Absolutely not a clue.
Okay. So Lanzante, I wish I could give them more credit than I'm about to do.
Where are they from?
England.
Oh, that means it'd be terrible.
No.
Here we go.
You're trying to stir the pot here and have a bit of a laugh and take the piss. But
no, I'm not.
Bear with me. I say, I wish I knew more.
Built in the Midlands?
Essentially, they ran and do run and work on all the McLaren F1 race cars, F1 GTR. I think they ran some of the teams back in the day. Right. Super legit engineering geniuses.
Mercedes and Aston Martin are in F1. And they can't be their two cars.
No, McLaren F1 road car, the race cars. The original McLaren F1s.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying. But if you're referencing that, I mean, the Valkyrie and the AMG
No. The McLaren F1.
Yeah.
No. I'm not saying.
But the technology still come from F1.
No, it didn't.
What, the McLaren F1?
Not a Formula One McLaren. Right. The McLaren F1.
I know, the worst car in the world. I know exactly what you're talking about. The most overhyped pile of poo-poo in the world. I know the car very well, thank you.
Right.
Yeah. But there was still some engineering that come from F1 at the time, right?
But the engine was obviously BMW.
Fair.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if McLaren made it, then there was some F1 technology gone in. So you can't use that as a complete reference because
one of the most iconic and successful road and race cars of all time, one of the most valuable cars on the modern market.
Yeah.
And an engineering marvel that dominated Le Mans at certain times and then was driven.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And others, the team that, here we go, were involved with running those cars. Right, you're good. Saying they ain't got a clue what they're doing.
I wouldn't admit that, but okay. But tell me about them. Tell me.
Bear you at times.
Well, just tell me, mate, because if you know, I'll back down. Okay.
Because I want to do them justice.
Okay.
So they also had Porsche 911 GT2 for the British GT Championships. They ran 911 Turbo competing in the GT3 Championship, 24-hour Le Mans with F1 GTR.
Right,
Lanzante did not return to motorsport again in 2003. Developed the Lotus Elise for British GT. Despite your mockery,
I'm not mocking.
Genuine mechanical engineering and race running geniuses.
Oh, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt for now. till I find out some more, but go ahead.
So you will have heard of them because not only were they road legalizing McLaren F1 GTRs and long tails, they started road legalizing P1 GTRs and things like that.
Okay.
And they debuted a few years ago. I think it was a P1 LM at Goodwood. It was like a sort of long tail-esque, you know, slightly different P1 that they'd kind of been working on. It got debuted. It was a very cool looking thing. And anyway,
I think I'm not sure whether it was the LM, but I think I saw that car at Heffingham Hall.
Potentially.
Yeah. On one of them.
It was a specialized.
I'm pretty sure I saw that there. If it was the LM.
So that was, I think, back 2016, 2017, something like that. Mm-hmm. And since then they've done various bespoke projects, but they launched this year the P1 Spider.
I saw that.
Yes.
Yeah, 10 years too late.
Well, why had it taken 10 years?
Yeah.
Maybe because no one ever asked for it.
Yeah.
As a design feat, probably fairly impressive. I would assume, and maybe I'm going to get this wrong, that the McLaren P1 tub would have a structure over, you know, the actual, a bit like with the some of the other McLarens, the carbon tub structure must go into the roof, doesn't it?
Well,
the cell, yeah. So the cell. So to get rid of the roof on a P1 must have taken ridiculous amounts of engineering and thought because it's integral to the actual car's build.
But that's like most convertibles or spiders, mate.
No, mate. It's not.
Well, it is when it comes to McLaren. I mean,
the carbon tub.
Yeah, but haven't all McLarens got carbon tubs?
No, because aren't the sports series just the tubs at the bottom? The P1, surely, uses
what a bit, about 720S?
720S does it have the same thing as a structure over the roof?
Well, that's how they sell the car, right?
Hold on a sec. The main cell or the tub for the 720, is it not just the base, or does it also claim that it goes into the roof? Here we go. So the 720S, is that a roof part?
I would think on the coupes it's there on all of them.
Okay, fine. Yes, you're right. It does. Yeah. The 720S does also have a roof component.
And I think the 600LT would and all that, but they obviously just engineer it to
well, no matter what,
it's still clever.
A non-factory company doing that and developing it is pretty amazing. And it was a very, very cool thing to see. And as you say, I mean, 10 years later, so it's kind of mad that it's taking someone that long to do it, but then also...
Well, it's difficult, mate.
Super difficult. Where's the design? But also, not only did they show that, they had the 930 TAG turbos. So back when Porsche wanted to develop engine, when McLaren asked Porsche to develop engines for their F1 cars, mm-hmm. Porsche used a 930 turbo as a test mule for these Formula 1 engines, 1,000 horsepower turbo engines.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lanzetta got permission, essentially, to build sort of celebrations of that. So they've done a load of cars that are original Porsche chassis with the F1 engines in them called the TAG turbos. Okay. Super desirable.
Is there anything to do with a Carrera GT engine?
No. Right. No. So fundamentally, across big collector, big money people, that I hear more and more about Lanzante these days than any other company.
Okay, fair.
Now, I don't think Lanzante have any plans to build their own cars. I think they're still always going to be tied in with their history, with existing cars, modifying or road legalizing or doing something. But they had a big old stand at Goodwood this year.
What were they displaying? That P1?
P1 Spider, the 930 TAG turbo thing. Yeah. I think they had a couple of other bits in there as well. But they're not messing around. It's proper cash. And I just think as time goes on, we're going to hear more and more about Lanzante. And I think because silly money across the place, we constantly talk on this podcast how people are getting more and more excited about modern classics or older cars rather than the brand new whatever. I'm just saying, I'm speculating Lanzante are going to be...
We'll keep an eye on it then. I mean, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt for now, but let's keep an eye on it and see if they actually do build anything.
Yeah, and write it down because, you know, you're going to look an idiot when all your mates start talking about Lanzante stuff. And you're going to go, idiots, those who worked on the worst car ever.
No, well, it is.
It's not, mate.
Well, it's just worth a few quid because of how rare it is.
No, well, actually it's worth a few quid because some people manipulated the market. But
correct.
It also because of what it achieved.
Yeah, one bloke Baltimore, and
it's because of what it achieved. Two blokes. It's because of what it achieved.
Okay.
Fine. I mean, it won 24-hour Le Mans and then drove home.
There's lots of other cars that
didn't drive home afterwards.
Okay, but there's lots of other cars that won 24-hour Le Mans.
Didn't drive home afterwards.
That, in your opinion, is too bob compared to F1.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of an achievement then, is it?
No, it is an achievement.
No, because you poo it, mate. Unless it's F1 and you're in the F1 car, this is crap. Okay, racing.
I'm not, because I can see what you're trying to do here, and you're just trying to fight me because you know that I'll.
I'm not fighting you, mate. I'm just referencing what you're saying.
You're being your classic, like, whatever. I don't care.
I like Le Mans.
No. So, did you see at Goodwood the Ford Supervan?
No.
Did you not see this?
No.
Oh, mate, you genuinely missed out.
Really?
This is a 2,000 horsepower electric van from Ford that I genuinely think, apart from until the McMurtry, I think stole the show. It's based on, look, an old historic transit that was used in, like here, look, this concept from back in 2004.
I've seen that car before. So that
That was the old original way back in the day.
Yeah.
And this is the new version. It's the Supervan 4 with 2,000 horsepower. It does 0-60 in less than 2 seconds. Mm. It was doing burnouts all day, every day. Look, how cool is that? That's the Supervan 3 going up the Goodwood Hill climbing God knows when. So this is the newer version. They've always had these Supervans. There's another one. There's a Supervan 1 or something like that. So they're these mad creations from Ford, and I love that they're still doing this. And of course, the world that we're all living in, they decided to go this year all electric.
Mate, which is a mistake.
No, this thing was nuts. A mistake because of us, but in the world and the climate we live in.
Well, a mistake because the government have announced today in peak times in the winter they're going to pay you not to have the electric on because the national grid's going to crash. So that's all a bit of insight for you and something to look forward to when you've all got electric cars and you can't charge them and you're bleeding and need to go to the hospital.
We're going to come on to this in 2 seconds because I know you're desperate to talk about it.
I'm not desperate to talk about it. No, I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, I know. We're going to discuss
it. Well, you can't believe, you cannot make it up.
Can I just show you this thing? Because it is just hilarious, mate. For a van, you cannot help but not love a van. Look at it. It's flying.
I drive a van every day,
thank you. That's what I mean. Like, as no matter what kind of petrolhead you are, if you see a 2,000 horsepower van, look at this thing, mate. It's flying.
It is flying, yeah.
I think I had to charge at the top of the hill. I'm not sure if I can make it back down without a recharge, but look at it.
But can I tell you as well, if you drove a van, every van in the country's got 2,000 horsepower, mate, because that's how they're all driven. Especially white ones.
Oh my God, white ones launched off the line. We're coming. Literally, just get out of the way. I wanted to find some footage of it doing a burnout, but I don't think I'm going to do that right now. We're going to drag this out too long. But okay, well, look, let's come on to what you were just saying, because also I sent you over the weekend an article that came out saying that I think 5 or 6 countries within Europe are now lobbying the European government to delay their ban on sale of ICE combustion engine vehicles.
Yeah.
I think to 2035 or beyond 2035?
Beyond to 2040. They want another 5 years.
They want another 5 years. This was big countries. I think it was Germany, France, Bulgaria. Where was that link?
Switzerland, I think. Switzerland. Well, there was a few.
And so, of course, you know, climate protesters raging at this. But, I mean, we predicted this a while ago.
A long time ago.
We said that, yeah. You know, here we go. So let me see. Italy, Portugal, Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania joined Germany in opposing a 2035 EV mandate. So we're going to hear so much more of this. And God, there's a big mess going on in the UK with our government. So let's not wade in on that, even though we like to be political every now and again. But this is the thing. And I spoke to so many manufacturers and so many companies at Goodwood about this. And I met a very interesting British battery company. Oh, please forgive me if I got this wrong. I think it's British Volt, who are building British battery technology for supercars specifically.
Right.
And
with hybrid technology or all? No, full battery.
Okay, fine. And more, everyone I spoke to at Good was of course aware of the fact that it's an unrealistic target.
Yeah.
They're unenthusiastic about the change ahead and are having to more and more proactively keep an eye on what everyone else is doing in terms of developing this tech. So if countries are now going to delay the imposing of all EV cars, do you think, personally, we could get to a stage where there's such a big U-turn that we're basically all F-U-C-K-E-D'd in the sense where, like, what's another example? We're all told diesel. We're all told to go down that route. And then we're going to have to backtrack.
That's the huge example, mate. And that's why I've always said, like, don't buy an electric car until you absolutely need to. Because we've seen it all before. The diesel was a huge thing where someone in the government or someone advising the government said, we've got to do this, we must enforce this, all go out and buy diesel cars. Now it's all go out and buy electric cars, but they changed their mind.
Yep.
I mean,
Got it wrong.
They've got it wrong, yeah, because whoever they've listened to or been advised was obviously clueless. Now, you can all take what you want and make your own minds up. You haven't got to listen to us or listen to anyone, but I always edge on the side of not caution, but we've said it many times before. If something in general can't work for everyone, it doesn't work. It can't work because we've said, like, there's lots of places in the world. There's even places in this country. It cannot work. And coming back to what I just said about the national grid, that was a thing we brung up before as well. Couldn't the national grid actually cope? And we had a man come on here and said, it's absolutely fine, it's nowhere near capacity, when I already knew that it was near capacity. And electric cars are only going to make that worse because we're going to draw more electric. And
What was the thing that they all keep saying? There's a big thing, the best thing is just plug it in overnight, because then, you know, usage is down, the grid isn't so... But if every single person is charging their electric car overnight... Disaster,
mate. So there was already a thing that come out. If everyone put their kettle on at 6 p.m, it'd shut the national grid down.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's going to be special charges that will trickle it in, and that's all absolutely fine in an ideal world. We don't live in an ideal world. We live in a mess. Do you know what I mean? So it's not practical, and we come back to it. The way to come over this. Is sort the fuel out.
Mm-hmm.
Engines aren't broken, don't fix it. That's been our form of transport for 100 years or so. It's been perfected. We've got petrol stations, we've got a huge infrastructure
emissions
around the world.
Emissions of a combustion engine car are lower than they've ever been.
For sure.
The filters and clever tech.
Absolutely. So instead of concentrating on motors and the infrastructure, can you imagine what that's doing to the to the world and the climate? Building it all, you've got to build the infrastructure around the world, factories, manufacturing. We already know that manufacturing a battery isn't as efficient as it is to actually make a car. We already know this. So yeah, maybe in 200 years time there may be some sort of benefit, but it might be too late by then, you know. So I think and this is why the manufacturers are really trying to concentrate on getting into F1, because they're going to make this synthetic fuel. And
motorsport's the ultimate test bed.
That's the ultimate test bed, yeah.
So my real question is, because as you say, it's a lot of stuff which we have talked about and covered, but I think, you know, this is the conversation I think all petrol heads need to be having right now. It's the top of our agenda, is what does our life look like moving forward? So, you know, even though we come onto this topic a lot on the podcast, I think it's important that we do.
It's a world problem.
Yeah. So, but my question today is off the back of Goodwood, and I said this was my question to so many manufacturers, is what does it mean, for example, for Jaguar, for Bentley, for Rimac, for Bugatti, companies who are for Lotus, who have come out and said that they're going all electric? This is the concern that I have, and I won't name any names, but I spoke to one manufacturer who said they are actively holding off. They are actively, they've made an announcement that they're going to be all electric by a certain date, but with the rate at which things are happening, they are on a massive whole plan where they are developing strategies for both eventualities, because of course their huge fear is you get to 2027 or 2028 or whenever you're launching your all new electric brand, and at that point the world's pedaling back from electric. Yeah. The mandates are changing.
Yeah, they've got the swimming trunks on, they're more backstroking.
Could we lose some brands here? Could we lose some money? Because if you are heavily investing into EVs, you are repositioning your company and your brand as an electric only brand, and after 2 or 3 years that's not relevant. People don't want your products, they want combustion engine cars. The cost, well, the question is, it's the loss of money, isn't it? Because the cost to go back to combustion engine cars probably won't be a lot, because they would have been there. It would probably be easier to revert back. But it's going to be the loss of money at developing an EV lineup that I think could cripple some really household manufacturers.
Well, I disagree with the big brands because it's the money's all borrowed and it's come from stocks and it's come from people investing. So the real big brands would be all right. But like with any change or any infrastructure movement, it's always the little blokes that suffer. Because unfortunately, we've said it again many times before, this world unfortunately revolves around money. And the more money you have, the more chance you have of surviving and you go to the top. So the big brands will be okay because, I mean, there was, I don't know if you saw Top Gear yesterday, there was this electric truck that's been announced, the Rivian.
Yeah, it's kind of old news actually, but go on.
But it's not, this is just to talk about the money bit essentially, that they've not even sold a car, they've not made a penny on paper, and they're worth 180 billion. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because it's been floated and everyone's pumped in. So, you know, the people that can afford the money and that can afford to lose the money, don't forget you're getting this money from millions and millions of people. Yeah, there will be smaller people that have invested and they're going to lose their money, but that's the risk of investment. Or it can go like Tesla and blow up.
But also, Tesla still full foul that. What was the Roadster, the deposit for the Roadster? And where's that car?
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
there's so many different examples, mate. You know, like the money bit wouldn't concern me too much because the big brands will be okay.
And a lot. $50,000.
Yeah.
Due in 10. So
yeah.
You know, and God knows how many reservations they got for that, for the Tesla Roadster.
Yeah. The big concern for me is the time. Why are you wasting all that time on trying to reinvent the wheel? Why don't you just concentrate on making a clean fuel? And I think the real clever manufacturers, I think they are hedging their bets. They're not stupid. And I think Porsche are one of them, where they are really going heavy on electric, but actually in the background, they know for sure that probably some of the real big brands that have invested, they haven't done it for a reason, mate, because they know that probably the end game is not going to all be electric.
I think the external marketing is a little bit different to the conversations going on behind the doors at the moment.
I agree. Yeah.
And there's obviously these global pressures and these agendas and these various things which we're seeing, these mandates to, you know, only EVs available or new sales from 2030, 2035, whatever that might be. Manufacturers have to respond to that.
Of course.
They have to be outwardly looking like they're doing that and pushing it forward. And we've said it many times before, the electric vehicles are getting better and better now. Mercedes had that EQ, whatever it was, that can do a thousand kilometres.
Was it an EQS?
I think it's the EQV, or the special one that can do 1,000 kilometres on one charge. So, you know, that's all getting better and better, but it's not necessarily the solution, as we've said. And yes, I think behind closed doors, and definitely having spoken to as many people as I could, it seems to be that they're all kind of holding station. Because, yeah, fine, maybe you're right about the money. I'm sure you are. It's more about brand power, brand value. Look at us. If we're sitting here and in 7-8 years time, Mercedes, BMW, they're only offering electric products, then maybe we are going to be turning to Alfa Romeo to get a combustion engine car, something that we wouldn't have maybe considered before. By the way, I was back in the Giulia Quattrofoglio on Saturday. Oh, I forgot how great those cars are.
I keep saying this.
So good.
Got one coming in stock next week.
Oh, look at that convenient.
Nice little plug.
Nice little segue. So that is more my kind of awareness, that I think we're in this messy scenario where, you know, electric vehicles are getting better and better. Manufacturers are putting a huge amount of money, time and effort into developing this. But at the same time, there's a bit of a panic behind the scenes and a bit of a realization that they've also got to keep developing some kind of combustion engine vehicle and some kind of synthetic fuel. And it's money, and it's confusing for them. It's confusing for us. And I don't really know what to make of it. And I'm the same as you. You know, at various points over the last 12 to 18 months, I've considered getting an electric vehicle. I still haven't pulled the trigger yet. At some point, I don't think I'm going to have the choice, but I think it's unrealistic for us all at this time to be switching, because national grid, infrastructure, all that, things like that, just...
There was huge government incentives as well up until this year, where you'd get grants. And I mean, if it's a company vehicle, they still look after you. But there's no grants or anything anymore, mate. They're just getting more and more expensive. Like anything, it's getting more and more expensive. But there's no real incentives to buy an electric car. And this is the start of the switch now. So what happens is because they're starting to sell a few, the government can't afford to keep propping it up. So there'll be a balance, there'll be a tilt where the government have said no more. And that's now, that's coming. So, and then when we get even more, then that's when you'll start to see levy, duty, tax on electric. I truly believe that that will happen because of all the tax they get from fuel, mate. So, you know, it's very interesting times, and I keep an eye on it regularly because it does interest me as well.
Of course.
The financial bit interests me, and the infrastructure, we know we are still miles away from getting anywhere near where we need to be. And it's only highlighted by people are buying more and more electric cars. So is it getting better? It's probably getting worse.
Well, and also just to touch on cost and money, I'm sure some EV fans or evangelists on here are going to be measuring and saying, oh yeah, but look at fuel. Fuel's going through the roof cost. So I was with a guy on Thursday, Friday, who turned up to an event in a Model 3. I said, oh, look, I'm super interested. Let's have a chat. He averages around 320, 340 mile range.
And that's one of the good ones, by the way.
Actually the best, yeah. I think, realistically. And that's why he said, look, build quality is pretty crap. There's lots that I don't like.
Yep. But which we've said before.
There's very few places in the UK that I can't do either on a single charge and just charge at home or use the supercharger network and be fine. So that's why he went for it. But he's on a subscription service. He gets insurance, he gets charging, he gets sort of basically everything thrown in the car.
Through Tesla.
Through Tesla.
Right.
$1,300 a month.
Yes.
$1,300 a month. Just to give you an idea, my initial quote for financing my upcoming GT3 is $1,300 a month.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, I have to put a bit more of a deposit in. I don't think he puts a deposit with the subscription service. But the RS6 was similar money.
If you compare it to an equivalent 60 grand car,
mate,
to what they are, I mean,
forget that.
Yeah.
Compare it to a 25 grand family hatchback.
Because the
Model 3 isn't, that's the entry level Tesla.
Yeah.
This is the everyman's electric car, the one that realistically you could run and you could use reliably with good range, okay, crap build quality and things like that, but is the theoretical go-to. Yes, you've got Q4 e-trons. Yes, you've got iX3s. Yes, you've got all these other products. But this is the one that realistically you could move into and probably run in your life easily enough. I think that's extortionately expensive.
Yeah. I mean,
what families are going out there spending $1,300 a month on a Tesla?
Yeah, we've said it before, haven't we? And you know, it will filter down and it will get cheaper because what we're doing is, as well with electric cars, you're still paying for the development because it's not there yet.
Of course. But right now, you know, I'll go, well, then go and buy a Fiat 500e and that will cost you 300, 400, or the ID3 of it.
Yeah.
But then you're not going anywhere near as far.
No.
So, oh yeah, I think big mess is still. And I found that was my big interest at Goodwood, was to really pin down some of these manufacturers and really ask what's going on, because I thought, I saw a lot of hype at Polestar. I think Polestar are doing fascinating and good things. There seems to be a lot of interest there. So the Lotus stand, once again, was absolutely heaving, but everyone was looking at the Emira, not the electric version. And around and about, whilst there was all these kind of, you know, electric avenue and new electric products, fundamentally, people are still there for engines and gas. Mm. So it was a really interesting insight to see where we're at now, 2022, impending mandates and time changes, and more and more manufacturers claiming to become electric only in just a matter of handful of years, a couple of years maximum. But there is still a long way to go, a lot of hesitance, a lot of cost to entry, all these different things. And so it just seems a bit overwhelming when you're on the ground and you're really assessing it with everything laid out in front of you, like at Festival of Speed. I was just like, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. Well, it just highlights what we've been saying, basically. It just confirms what we have been saying over the last few years. And
because as you keep repeating, we're always right.
Well, I mean, I am. Was there anything else at Goodwood?
There was lots. You know, M3 Touring obviously debuted. It looked good in the flesh.
Yeah.
You know, a bit like everything else around the world, you see most things online before you get there these days. You know, most stuff is revealed. I thought the 3RS was going to be unveiled. Wasn't.
No, that is coming though. That car, that's clearly. What about the Subaru?
The 22B thing?
Yeah.
£500,000.
Yeah.
Oh, look great. Look like a 22B.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of nice stuff. The new Huayra. elongated version.
The SP3, the Ferrari.
SP3 looked really nice, but I saw that last year.
Did so, you? Oh, yeah, of course you did, yeah.
And the launch thing. 296 was... loads of nice stuff. Mm. Loads of nice stuff. A few quirky hypercars, supercars that I didn't really...
GT4 RS, saw that.
Yeah, that looked nice. Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I was there mainly on the Saturday. Got to hang out with Guan Yu Zhou.
F1 saw that. Did you have a chat with him?
Yeah, long chat with him. Super nice.
Any goss, any inside, anything he tell you?
He's feeling competitive. He said, from their side, they're a bit confused about the performance of the car. The tracks they think they're going to be quick at, they're not always.
Ferrari engine.
Yeah. But he said, so that's a bit weird. Whenever they think they're going to be competitive, they're not always competitive. He feels like he's on a par with Valtteri now. He's feeling pretty good off the back of Canada. He said, no real goss. Everything that we expect, a Formula One feels different to anything else.
Yeah.
He feels like he's got up to speed pretty good, though. He said the most hard and shocking thing is what comes with F1. The scrutiny, the recognisability, the constant media attention. I mean, mate...
He'd been paid for that, though.
He would freely admit that he's not the biggest superstar in Formula One. And on that day, I think he was the only F1 driver there on that day, but it doesn't matter. On the Alfa Romeo stand, I reckon... 250 people plus queuing up to meet him and get autographs, blah blah.
That's what he's paid for. That's part of being.
I don't know if he's
successful.
Paid for it and how much he pays for it. If you know what I mean. Like, I don't think that
he'd still be on a salary though, right? I mean, he's probably
debatable.
Really?
Yeah, because most of those drivers at entry, usually if there's a sponsor criteria, they might be on 100, 150 grand, or you know, is the sort of base for. Really non-drivers, but they're having to bring in 5 to 10 million euros of sponsorship. Mm. So
I'm sure the sponsors are paying him, though. I'm sure he's on more than... I think, you know, he'd be naturally a millionaire, I would have thought.
I doubt it highly.
Really?
Really doubt it, mate. Well, if you speak to Chilton about that F1 time, sorry.
True colours are coming out now. This is what he's like all the mate, while off camera, no. Effing and blinding. You wouldn't be. He went to one of the best schools in the world.
You really think? And it's a smashing or smattering of the dream. I've looked at this so much. Like Giovinazzi just coming out of it. It's been spoken as well. Like they don't get paid any money to begin with, mate. They don't get paid any money.
Fair enough.
Everything gets taken care of.
Yeah.
You can get sponsorships and brand deals, but that's all going to the team to secure your seat.
Yeah. Alfa Romeo is a proper team, though, isn't it? It's not like, I mean, no disrespect to people that race at the bottom of the grid, but, you know, they really are scraping the barrel compared to the manufacturers, you know? So you'd think if you drive for a manufacturer, or, you know, we know the contracts that Lewis and Max are on and Lando and, you know, I would think that Alfa Romeo, I mean... Bottas, mate, hasn't, you know...
Bottas is on about 10 mil, I think.
Yeah, so but then Grandjean ain't going to be on 150 grand. He's as quick as him.
F1, yeah, he is. It's not. It'll be performance related.
Really?
Go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
An experience.
You're going to be really shocked. So F1 driver salary is 2022. Let's go down to the bottom. Obviously, we know Hamilton is right up there with all the cash.
It's amazing, isn't it? Where you all, the top best 20 drivers in the world, and... You can go from nothing. It's like being in the Premier League in football. They're all on unbelievable money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas the top elite drivers in the world, you'll get some that are on not a lot of money. And then they're on top money, the top drivers.
To be fair, it's saying here that Zhou's on $1 million.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's a lot more than the last thing. Sonoda, it says, is on the least at $750,000, which these days is more. But I definitely know of reports where Giovinazzi and that, like, were on, like, $250,000.
Yeah, fair.
I think you say that's what he's being paid for. I don't think he was saying it in a negative way. I don't think but that's what he's noticed.
Yeah.
He's noticed that he said the driving, I've got up to speed, you know, quicker than I thought I would. The cars are as quick as I thought they would be. It is a huge step. But the actual amazing, shocking, mind-blowing part is what being an F1 driver is, what it does to you, the amount of commitments, the amount of places you're going, the amount of stuff you're doing, which I think he was kind of buzzing from.
Yeah.
But he said that's the bit which is really hard to conceptualize before you're in it.
You can probably relate to that, though, mate, because you was a star on the Mille Miglia. I mean, everyone knew you were.
It's very true, mate. And I've driven an F1 car, so basically
restricted one,
basically,
by the way.
As famous as Grandjean. Anyway, we hope
did he ask for your autograph?
He actually did. Asked for a selfie. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. As I say, stay tuned because next week you've got all the Melia gossip coming at you. And then I think we must be approaching our next live event, mate.
We are a couple of weeks away.
Exactly.
At my place.
If you want to follow Tony, follow maybe some of his adventures on his holiday. He's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. You can also see what cars he's got coming into stock each week or as and when cars are coming through. If you want to follow me, I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And yes, we'll be back with you for another episode very soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.